Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings be upon you. Good evening. You are listening to Radio Islam at WCEV 1450 AM Chicago. I'm your host, Shermin Ahmed, and co-hosting with me today is
Wahash Khan.
We are a live call-in talk radio program airing every day from 6 to 7 p.m. Central, and we reach the world by streaming live at radioislam.com, where you can tap into all of our prior shows as well. To add to our conversation today, as we discuss Muslim women and their plights as going into the profession of medicine, you can call us at 312-263-ISLAM. That's 312-263-4752. And also, you can add to our conversation by posting on our Facebook page at facebook.com/radioislam1450 or tweet us at radioislam1450. As I said earlier today, we're going to be talking about Muslim women taking up the profession of medicine, which props to all of these Muslim women because I cannot handle that. But, you know, it's an important profession out there, and it deserves a lot of respect because we...
What would we do if we didn't have Muslim doctors, where, you know? Like, where would we be? Especially, like, if I've taken to my mom a doctor a couple of times and she doesn't feel comfortable with the guy. So,
yes,
like, you know, like...
It's very important.
Especially if she's a Muslim, she can relate a lot more culture-wise, you know? It's like a psychological thing going on. So it's important, you know?
Definitely, definitely. And I think we have to remember that there's all kinds of medicine out there, too. But our wonderful guest today will be explaining that. So we're going to start off with our first guest today, who is an instructor at Eastern Illinois University, Professor Nida El Mouti. She was born and raised in Palestine. She moved to the United States at the age of 16 and finished high school in New Jersey. After she attended Rutgers University in New Brunswick, New Jersey, majoring in physiology. And then she has been teaching at EIU since 1993 and has been married for 30 years with three adult children. One is 29, one is 25, and one is 19. Welcome to our show, Professor El Mouti.
Thank you so much.
Walaikum Assalam.
Walaikum Assalam.
Thank you so much for coming on to our show today.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure. Hello?
Hello, yes.
Can you hear me okay?
We can. Can you hear us okay?
Okay. I can hear you about the mobile instruction.
Your voice is cutting a little bit.
T-Mobile doesn't work very well in Charleston, Illinois. Apologize.
I can attest to that because I was there with T-Mobile. That is a true statement.
It's so frustrating. Can you hear me better?
Yes,
yeah, we can hear you a little bit better. T-Mobile, you need to step up.
No. Okay. So I'm actually outside on the deck. Go ahead.
Okay.
Okay, well, it's so wonderful to have you on the show and to get your perspective as a professor who is teaching like biology and medicine to people. So I guess let's start off with what led you to the path that you took with medicine?
Well, it's actually really interesting. I'm not in medicine. I actually teach anatomy and physiology for pre-med, pre-dental,
okay,
pre-physical therapy students. So I guess you're asking what led me to education?
Yes,
teaching,
like around
teaching
this
in
path,
the teaching
know?
Like the medicine field. Mm-hmm.
It was an interesting path. I actually was a physiologist and a medical technologist at the Rutgers Medical School. But as all young women, I got married, and my husband came to Charleston, Illinois, and taught in the business school, mm-hmm. and. The next job was as I applied and got in, and I've been teaching since 93, and it's a path I never really thought I would be in, but I absolutely love it, and a lot of people have gone on and became physical therapists and dentists and doctors, and I hear from a lot of them over the years, so it's a rewarding job,
yeah,
I guess.
Definitely. And for our listeners out there, I'm actually an Eastern Illinois grad, so Charleston, Illinois is my second home. Shout out to the Panthers out there.
Thank you. We need that.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess we did talk about that. We kind of mentioned it then. What are the paths that people can take to go into medicine? I think when people are interested in doing something in the field, there are a lot, I know, hearing from my own personal experiences with friends who want to do things and they're trying to figure out what kind of majors to take. Can you kind of highlight what are some good paths for them?
Sure. You can actually be any major at a higher education. You could be a history major and take all of the pre-med requisites, mm-hmm. which are a list of about 8 to 10 classes, the 2 biologies, 2 major chemistries, biochem, physics, organic, and then go on to take the entrance exam, which they call the MCAT, and then go on to medical school. So you don't have to be, per se, a biologist or a chemist to go into medical school. Mm-hmm. You could choose any path. You could be an engineer and take on these pre-med courses and go on and apply to medical school. It's an amazing, rewarding field. It really is. I have a daughter who's an M4, and she's about to graduate medical school and went from Eastern, but she went the traditional route, which is mm-hmm. to major in biology and chemistry and take all those science classes. But you really don't have to. You could be an English major, like I said before, and just take the pre-med prerequisites and go on to medical school. And now medical school have diversified quite a bit. So actually they do look for those non-traditional kind of students who mm-hmm. are well-rounded and, mm-hmm. you know.
That's really interesting because I have a friend in New Jersey. He was going to medical school, so I kept asking him like what he's doing his pre-med, and I kept saying bio, psych, and a bunch of other like sciencey like stuff, and then he told me he's doing math, and I'm like wow, okay, and I'm like, why is that? He's like, the thing with math is it's like if your brain is really good at math, then like it's like it increases your IQ. If you do like a lot of math problems, it just increases your IQ. And so, this shows like how good you are at problem solving and everything like that. So, he's saying that's what like a lot of med schools are looking in that now. So, if like you're good at math and you excel a lot in that, I guess they like that these days. But is it one question I want to ask you? Is it harder? Say if you take that route. Say if you go into like a field more in the arts than the science, in English or something else like that, would it be harder for you to complete? Because you're taking completely different courses. Because you're taking the pre-med courses. To get into med school, then you're taking the school for your actual major, which is in the arts. So is it much tougher?
I really don't think so. It's just how badly you want it. That's the one thing that I have to emphasize. How badly do you want to go to medical school and become a doctor? So I don't think so. Actually, it would be actually more enjoyable. Like, let's say biology. I'm a biologist. We have a lot of classes that you absolutely don't need to take to go into medical school. For example, ecology. For example, those botany, right, or some class like mm-hmm. that. So if you are interested in art, if you're an artist and you love that field, all you need to do is to strengthen your science core and go on to become a doctor, go into medical school. So I think it's on the contrary. I don't think it's harder. It'd probably be a much more enjoyable type of field instead of taking all of those unnecessary classes to complete, for example, a biological sciences degree. So no, the short answer is I don't think it's harder. Those classes are going to be different. Some will be challenging. Some will be... You know, it's no different than, for a bio major to take Calculus 1 and Calculus 2. It's something that you have to complete. But, no, I don't think it's going to be harder at all.
All right.
And I know a lot of people who went into English and history and those classes, psychology, kinesiology. I've had, personally, amazing students who went into kinesiology and took the pre-med prerequisites, and I hear from a particular woman that is a doctor right now in Miami, very successful. She was one of the brightest students I've ever had, a lot smarter than our bio majors. So, no, it's not.
That's actually kind of cool, you know? You're really well-rounded as you're going into it. Yeah. Well, that's cool. That gives me hope. Me and Wahad are actually talking about my life goals, and I'm at a big question mark in the way. So that's kind of cool to know I still have med school as an avenue. Somehow I want to go through that.
You better start studying for the MCATs right now, girl.
It is an amazing field. It is a rewarding field. It is very respected. Mm-hmm. You truly have to love it, though, and you truly have to want it. I mean, there are times where my daughter would come in after 16 hours rotation, and she says, I am so glad I really wanted this, and I love every minute of it because it is daunting at times.
Definitely.
So, yeah. So from that sense, you have to be driven by the love of the field. Unfortunately, a lot of people go into medicine because it's lucrative financially, and you're not going to be very happy. Money isn't everything.
Yeah. One thing I want to ask you is relating to that question. Mashallah, I see that you're very happy in the field that you are. Now, we see a lot of doctors today, and that's why people get kind of scared going to the doctor's office, seeing if they can trust that doctor, because were they just there for the title, the money? Were they forced for it because their parents were doctors and stuff like that? And later on, they find themselves in their fields where they didn't want to be a doctor. And a lot of friends that I have in med school, they actually tell me a lot of their professors, they don't really like what they do because they went to a doctor just because they're peer pressured to go in it and stuff like that.
That's sad.
So I just want to ask you, is it really actually true that like there is a good amount of people, like even at the professor level, at the collegiate level, that are teaching grad school, or undergrad, that are at that level where like they're like, why'd I go into this field?
You know, there are some that are pressured, especially if you come from a family who both parents or one of them are doctors, and then the children are a little bit pressured into going into the field, and that's really unfortunate. I really and truly believe in any field. It doesn't have to be medicine. If you love what you're doing, you never feel that you worked a day in your life. I absolutely love physiology. I absolutely love the human body and how it works. And I go to work and I come home and I say, I can't believe they paid me for doing something that I adore. And I've been doing it for 23 years. So you got to love what you're doing. That's the most important thing. A lot of people go into medicine because of the, the title or what have you, the respect society puts. And I come from an Eastern society, and doctors are, elevated to such a level. And that's unfortunate because you have to have the compassion. You have to have the desire to help people and not be driven by the 15 minutes that they allow you to see patients or bought by pharmaceuticals and things of that nature. So, there are people who are forced into it because of, financial and other things. But it's unfortunate. But we do have a lot of good doctors.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
That are driven by the need to help people and by amazing mentors that showed them a great path. So,
one other thing is, if like say you're a professor, what if you have one of those students, they're in med school now and they feel like they went into this career for the wrong reason? Is it hard to teach them? And how is it just being a professor and like dealing with a student with that mentality?
Yeah, well, see, I actually see them before they go into medical school. So once they go into medical school per se, I don't really have as much as of on a day-to-day contact with them. So most of my students are in the pre-med field applying to medical school. Like my graduate student, for example, she's applying to medical school and applying to PhD school. She's doing a dual.
So you advise them, tell them like, hey, if you don't want it, don't go into it.
I do. I really do.
That's good.
I really do.
I need mentors like that.
I'm a mom first, and you want to see your children really happy in the things that they choose for themselves. Never interfered what they studied. So if I see somebody being tormented that way, I'd say, don't go for it. Or if I see somebody who really wants it so bad, but oh, I'm not good enough or I'm not smart enough. It's just go for it. What can they do? You get rejected, you apply again, or you do, you get a master's, and it prepares you even more. So, because most people actually don't go in because of fear of rejection, more so than sometimes people go in and they regret doing it. So those numbers are actually fewer, the ones that are forced by parents or by society.
So you talked about how you are teaching the classes that are kind of some of the ones that students are going to need as they go through with medical school and get that route. Mm-hmm. So how do you think that it hasn't, like, your impact is having, like, being a minority and being a woman, as their professor? What kind of impact do you think that has on them?
Over the years, I've had a lot of women students that came to me after they graduated, and they say, you have impacted me. I wanted to do what you're doing because I really did respect and wanted to emulate what you're doing, and you seemed so excited all the time and loved your field. So I think when I first started at Eastern, I was the only minority. I was the only foreigner teaching at EIU, and especially physiology, a tough course. Today, fortunately, it's very interesting. I make a joke out of that. Every anatomy and physiology class is taught by a foreigner. So it's not as much as it used to be before. But a lot of girls that graduated, like that doctor I was telling you about in Miami, she contacts me all the time. She says, I still have your lectures. Oh, even in medical school, we've gone over very, very similar, and I go over your lectures and your exams, and I'm so glad I took that at Eastern.
That must make
I'm
you really proud.
It does. That's the event that makes it all worth it. Like, oh my God, that makes it well worth it.
Because I feel like as a professor, like as a teacher in general, you want to affect them, like, outside of when they leave, because a lot of professors and teachers are just like, hey, do good on the exam, and that's it. That's all I'm going to teach you, and that's all I'm going to teach you. But really, we have to prepare students for, like, what comes after school or med school and everything like that, and, like, life.
Yeah, I actually formed a lot of relationship with my female students well after they graduate, and they keep in touch, and they'll say, we just took the board exam, or we just did this exam, and I just finished my rotation, or I finished my residency. And it makes you really proud. It makes you feel like one of your children have achieved, that goal. And so, it does. It does make me feel very, very good.
Well, thank
like
you.
One of my children.
Well, thank you, Professor Almuti, for inspiring all
of us. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm so glad you could join us on the show. Good luck with everything with this semester.
Thank you so much. Good luck to you, too.
Thank you very much.
Salaam alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. Peace be upon you.
Wa alaikum salam.
All right. Well, you were just listening to Professor Almuti from Eastern Illinois University, an instructor of biology. In the biological department, I should say, because she specializes in physiology. And we are talking about Muslim women in medicine today. So stay tuned as we come back to the conversation. And don't forget, we want to hear from you. So call in at 312-263-ISLAM. That's 312-263-4752. Or post on all of our social media pages or any one of them under the handle for Radio Islam 1450 to join in.
Hey, America, we need to have a little talk. We've got more food in our country than we know what to do with. Food at the grocery store and food in the vending machines, fast food, health food, and seafood. We've got so much food that anything people don't buy, we just throw out. Yet 17 million kids in America struggle with hunger. That ain't right. Luckily, the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks has volunteers gathering excess food and getting it to hungry kids. They're kind of like food angels. Yeah, I made that up. It's kind of catchy. Hello, people. This isn't rocket science. We could solve hunger today. To start, become a food angel yourself by supporting Feeding America in your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. That's a website. Duh. We can't do it without your help. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Would your business survive a disaster? Nearly two-thirds of businesses aren't prepared for an emergency, and 40% of businesses that experience a disaster never recover. Make an emergency plan now before it's too late. For a free online tool that helps you develop an emergency plan to keep your business up and running should disaster strike, visit ready.gov/business. Brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, the American Red Cross, and the Ad Council.
Did you know that birthday parties help build confidence in kids?
Yeah. Did you know that giving kids less sugar before bedtime helps them sleep better?
Oh, totally. Did you know that friendly kids have more friends?
Everybody knows that.
Hey, guys, did you know that most people think they're using the right car seat for their kid, but they're not?
I didn't know that.
Parents who really know it all know for sure that their child is in the right car seat at the right age and size. Visit safercar.gov/the right seat to make sure your child is protected. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. You're listening to Radio Islam at WCEV 1450 AM Chicago. We reach the world live by streaming at radioislam.com, where you can review all of our prior shows. We are a call-in talk show every night from 6 to 7 p.m. Central Time, and our call-in number is 312-263-4752. Also, connect with us by posting on our wall at facebook.com/radioislam1450 or tweeting us at radioislam1450. Today we're having a conversation about Muslim women and medicine and everything they're going to. And our next guest is actually someone who is currently in the process of finishing up med school. So we have Mehvish Moyodin. She is a fourth-year medical student at Touro University, Nevada, where she serves as the public relations representative for the DO class of 2017. She is from the Chicagoland area and studied sociology at Northwestern University as an undergraduate. Her interests include acute care, preventive medicine, and sports medicine, and she plans to pursue a family medicine residency upon graduation. Welcome to our show, Mehvish.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited. Me and Mavish actually go way back, and she's one of my role models. So this is so exciting to have you on the show.
Thank you. I'm flattered.
So I actually got a chance to talk to your mom, I think it was last weekend at a wedding, and she was telling me that you are going through a lot of crazy hours and stress. So do you want to tell us what your life looks like right now?
Sure. So I'm in my fourth year. So every month I'm kind of doing something different. And what I'm doing is basically auditioning at different hospitals that I potentially want to be working at for my residency. So you really want to put your best foot forward and make sure you're always there when they need you and taking advantage of all your learning opportunities. So last month I was on an inpatient rotation. And so it was crazy. I was doing overnights. So it was 12-hour shifts that were overnight. And then some weeks I was doing 12 to 14 hour day shifts, so with about like one day a week off. So I was definitely hitting about more than 70 hours a week, which is a little stressful, and trying to fit in some sleep is also a priority.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
She still made time to come on the show, though. We appreciate that.
I know, we really do. I know you're crazy busy right now, but so we were talking to our past guest, who's a professor of biology, about how you have to be passionate to be in this, because like you said, 70 hours a week as just in med school is a lot. So what kind of drove you to do the medical line?
You know, I think it's as you grow older and you continue your education, your motivation kind of changes. And so I would say while I was in high school and undergrad, my motivating factor was just I was interested in health and I was interested in science, and it just seemed logical. That those two overlapped and it made sense to do medicine. But I think as you get more involved in the process, your motivation changes. So I had a really good experience during my undergrad career working as a student athletic trainer, which really drove me to do sports medicine. And so ever since I had that experience, that's kind of been my motivating factor, was that's what I want to do in the future. So I have to do everything I can now to get there. And so I think it changes as you get older, but having a strong support system, so my family has been huge, having a strong support system and a good reason to stay in it. Otherwise, it's hard to do 70 and 80-hour work weeks if you really are in it for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, definitely. Did your family always kind of support you to get on this line?
Yeah, I think they've always been really supportive. Luckily, I had parents that weren't like, you have to go to medical school. Mm-hmm. It was always an option. They just wanted me to be educated. But they definitely set me up to be successful in terms of education. And even through medical school, even though I wasn't living at home, they were always really supportive. And I would call my mom late nights, and she would talk through with me all my stress and everything like that. Or if I came home crying one day, she was always there to be like, it's going to be okay. This is just one day. And then my dad was always there too, being really supportive and always asking if I wanted to come home or if they wanted to come visit me. So they've always been there, which is really nice to have during medical school, at least.
Yeah, I'm sure. Okay, Mavish, we're going to actually have to take a quick break. So stay with us as we come back from these messages. And don't forget, you can still share your thoughts with us at 312-263-ISLAM. That's 312-263-4752.
Keyboard Cat, Hamilton the Pug, and Toast Meets World. These are some of the internet's most beloved pets. With millions of YouTube views, shares, Instagram likes, followers, and fans across the globe. But what do all these amazing pets have in common? Their stories started in a shelter. Start your story. Adopt a dog or cat today. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a shelter or adoptable pets near you. Training that pet to play the keyboard? Well, that's entirely up to you. Visit theshelterpetproject.org and hear more about Hamilton the Pug, Toast, and Keyboard Cat's amazing adoption stories. Start a story. Adopt a shelter or rescue pet today. Your perfect pet is just a click away at theshelterpetproject.org. A public service announcement brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
You're so annoying.
You're so annoying.
Stop copying me.
Stop copying me.
Mom, tell her to stop copying me.
Mom, tell her to stop talking to me.
Kids will spend 10 minutes copying everything their sibling says.
You're such a doofus.
You're such a doofus.
How about 2 minutes to brush their teeth? Brushing for 2 minutes now can save your child from severe tooth pain later. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. 2 minutes, twice a day. I have the time.
Mom!
A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ad Council.
Thank you for staying with us through the break here at Radio Islam, 1450 AM WCEV Chicago, streaming live on radioislam.com. You can listen to all of our previous shows by hopping onto our website or SoundCloud and add into the conversation today by calling in at 312-263-4752 or posting on our wall at facebook.com/radioislam1450 or tweeting us at radioislam1450. Today we've been talking about Muslim women in medicine, and we're going to come back to our conversation with a med student, Mavish Moyuddin. Mavish, are you still there?
I am.
Great. Okay, so I know that you kind of said that your parents were supportive of you through this and didn't pressure you in, but a lot of times we kind of do see that in our culture people are pressured to take the medical route. Have you had any experiences with people that you've met who are in that situation?
You know, I think I have run into people that have kind of been forced into the process, and I feel like I have a few friends that have also been forced into the process. And sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't. So I have a couple of friends that finished medical school, passed boards, and so they have that MD or DO after their name, but ended up not practicing in the long run and decided to get an MBA as well. Mm-hmm. And they kind of went like healthcare administration or management, just because they realized they didn't want to practice medicine or clinical medicine per se. And then I've also had friends that it worked out where they were forced into it and they grew to love it, or they really found their area of specialization that they grew to fall in love with, at least. So it's worked out both ways, and it's one of those things that, you know, it's an opportunity. It's some people want it, some people don't. It's hard to stay motivated, like I said earlier. So if you're in it because you were forced to do it, it's definitely harder, I think, emotionally and mentally to get through medical school and get through a residency if you don't actually want to be there.
Mm-hmm. All right, so maybe is it your fourth year now in med school? What year are you in?
Yeah, I'm a fourth year medical
okay,
student.
Okay, so does it just get harder as you like you move on to like the first year to fourth year? Does it just get harder and harder, or did you just like get the hang of it?
It's a little bit different. So I definitely think once you're kind of thrown into medical school, it's different because if you worked before, you're getting thrown back into an academic environment. So that was a little bit rough for me. Second year, it gets more interesting in terms of your classroom experience because you're actually learning about like diseases and treatments and things like that. Because the first year for us, or at my school at least, was more basic science-based. And then the third year and the fourth year are your clinical years. So your third year is hard because you don't know what you're doing necessarily. It's your first time being in a clinic, being expected to know everything okay. that you learned the first 2 years. And then the fourth year gets easier because now you have a little bit more experience and you're more comfortable doing your clinical practice.
Okay, so like by like the third and fourth year, there's not much classroom stuff left. There's more like out there in the field more.
Right.
Okay.
And every once in a while, I'll go back to campus for a lecture or a test at the end of the month, but a lot less classroom time. And most of it is lectures during at the hospital if you're doing actual learning in a classroom.
So do students enjoy that more, being in like the actual field rather than being in the classroom?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I think for most medical students, they come to do the clinical aspect of it. So it's really, we're very excited to start our third years. Even though it's a little bit stressful, it's what we came to medical school to do, and it's great to finally get started at it after working for two hard years.
Okay, so so experience out there. I've always had this question. You guys have to work with dead bodies, don't you?
We do.
What's that like? Like, what was your first experience with that?
So I had been exposed to it a couple of times before, not as in depth as I was in medical school. But they do a really good job at Toro of preparing you for it because they know it's not easy. And so you basically walk into our anatomy lab, and we have groups of five or six students per cadaver. And you kind of just go in, and they give you, you're supposed to prepare ahead of time as to like where you're going to cut and what you're studying in particular. So you have to come in prepared. But the first time definitely is a little bit eye-opening.
Mm-hmm.
But they tell you to watch a video to prepare you a little bit as to what to expect. And they have, and usually medical schools will offer like counselors if you need to talk about it. You're excused for religious reasons, I believe, if you want to be, or if you choose to be. And then they also do a really good job about like respecting the bodies and realizing that, you know, they're donating their bodies so that you can learn medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was an important process of part of the process. So it's weird at first, and then you get used to it. So by the end of end of my anatomy course, it didn't even faze me anymore.
Well, good for you. I still can't do that.
It's rough. It's definitely rough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we've kind of talked about the stigma of like people, our like culture kind of saying, pressuring people mm-hmm. to go into the line of medicine. So now taking it the opposite direction, if you have an answer of what about also kind of have you seen people where their families are like not wanting them, the females, to do like such a hard-hitting profession because they have this mentality that you're going to get married, et cetera, kind of thing?
Let me think about that for a second.
I know, I kind of just threw it out there.
That's a good question, and I feel like we think that happens more than it does. I personally can't think of, it's always kind of a running joke that my friends and I have that they're like, oh, we're not going to get married until we're a lot older now. but I can't really think of anyone in my class where their family isn't supportive because they wanted something else for their son or daughter.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good to know.
We have like 1 minute left. So Leslie, like, okay. What advice would you have for current people that are taking the MCATs? We're looking to get into med school or starting med school, what advice would you have for them?
Stay motivated. Have a constant reminder of why you're doing what you're doing because it's not easy. Have fun with it and be okay with making mistakes because a lot of mistakes happen. So be okay with making mistakes, and that's the best way to learn.
Well, thank you so much for coming on to our show, Mavis.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I hope to see you soon, inshallah.
Inshallah.
Yeah. And good luck with everything, too.
Okay, thank you.
Assalamu alaikum, peace be with you.
All right, you are listening to Radio Islam. So don't touch that dial because we'll be back after these messages with our next guest talking about actually being in the field of medicine and practicing. There is still time to share your thoughts and questions on our program, so please remember to call in at 312-263-ISLAM. That's 312-263-4752.
I wish I was in school.
I wish I was in school.
I wish I was in school.
Summer isn't fun when you're hungry.
If only I had a big test today.
Or a book report to give.
Give me a math quiz.
Give me some homework.
If your child relies on free school lunches, we can help provide them with free meals this summer.
I'll stay after class.
I'll clean the chalkboard.
I'll keep my desk real clean.
So they can stop worrying about food and start focusing on fun.
I'll do extra homework.
I'll clean the class pet's cage.
I'll skip recess.
School might end, but free lunches don't have to.
I wish I was in school.
I wish I was in school.
If your child relies on free school lunches, we can help provide them with free meals this summer. Visit feedingamerica.org/summermeals to find your local food bank for help. Once again, that's feedingamerica.org/summermeals. Together, we're feeding America. A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Dave, what are you doing?
Just sending a gift to Dave 2037.
Who?
Me in the future. I save a little money from every paycheck for Dave 2037 so he can buy anti-gravity boots or a hologram Doberman. What are you getting Steve 2037?
Steve 2037 will be just fine.
Okay, but don't expect to borrow my anti-gravity boots.
Save something for the future. Put away a few bucks, feel like a million bucks. For free ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. That's
feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
This is a guided meditation on parenting. Take this time to breathe deeply and close your eyes. Right now, you're completely in control. Unlike the time you and your son played basketball and you attempted to slam dunk. Or when you tried removing those raccoons from the basement. Concentrate on the soothing sound of my voice. Release the memory of when you wrestled with that beehive in your son's treehouse. Let go of the time you thought that skunk was a cat, or when you pulled into the garage with your son's bike on top of the car. Deep breaths, deep breaths.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Radio Islam at 1450 AM WCEV. If you haven't gotten a chance, visit our website at radioislam.com or SoundCloud to see all of our prior shows and listen to the ones you love or might have missed. And we want to hear from you, your ideas and questions, so leave us comments on our Facebook page and on Twitter at the handle RadioIslam1450. Tonight, we're discussing Muslim women in medicine and what they're doing to get out there in the field. We actually have another guest with us today who is practicing as well as teaching the profession, Dr. Sara Siddiqui. She started her journey at the University of Toledo, where she completed her bachelor's degree majoring in biology. She later went on to complete medical school at Ohio University College of Osteopathic Medicine. Uh-oh, I got to learn these terms, Wahaj. Dr. Siddiqui has practiced at Adventist Health Partners, Holy Cross Hospital, and currently is an assistant clinical professor of internal medicine at Midwestern University. Welcome to our show, Dr. Siddiqui.
Thank you. Assalamu alaikum. Thank you so much.
Alaikum assalam. It's great to have you.
Assalamu alaikum. Peace be upon you.
Okay, so my first question is going to be, can you explain to us your specific field, this osteopathic, did I say it right?
Osteopathic, uh-huh.
Yes. Medicine. Okay. Can you kind of explain kind of what that does?
So the training is, in the beginning part of medical school, is a little different than allopathic, which is our typical MDs. Mm-hmm. osteopathic, the whole philosophy is looking the body at the body as a whole. So right from the beginning in the first year of medical school, we learn how to use our hands to find changes in the body and be also be able to treat them. So it's kind of a different approach where in the allopathic or the MD world, the students are not necessarily touching, learning the art of you know, finding diseases until kind of in the clinical years versus in osteopathic, it kind of starts from like day one. So it's a little different. It's a kind of in how to describe it in layman's, it's kind of like kind of thing like a masseuse and a chiropractor, mm-hmm. kind of what we do, and a little bit in between would be the closest association. But okay. really we learn the muscles, how they change, how different things get affected, and then how you can actually find it by using your hands.
Did you always know that you wanted to take this path, or is it something that kind of came as you were studying?
No, it kind of fell in. I actually am from the Chicagoland area.
Okay.
And I had wanted to try something different, so I moved to Ohio for undergrad. And from there, it kind of was, at that time when I was applying for medical school, it was an easier route, I suppose, but also it was something that made more sense to me. Mm-hmm. When I started medical school, it was right a few weeks before 9/11. So it was just a very interesting time to kind of be in that role, mm-hmm. and it was fun at the same time. It kind of fell in my lap more than I chose it. So that's kind of how I ended up there. But then I was able to come back here for residency.
Cool. How do you balance having such a busy profession and also raising a family?
So it's a lot of planning ahead. It's a lot of planning and asking for help. I actually work both places part time, sounds kind of not full time, but it kind of is. But I think it's a lot of just kind of figuring out the schedule that works for me and my family. My husband travels a lot for work internationally, mm-hmm. And so then it's kind of just coordinating with other people in my life to help with pickups and drop-offs if my schedule doesn't allow it. So it's just kind of trying to, I've always from the get-go after graduating residency known that I wanted to raise a family, and I have three boys now, mashallah, so it's just a matter of just trying to coordinate. It's a lot of coordination.
Are any of them kind of taking in your interest in this field as well and wanting to pursue, I don't know, how old are your children?
No, they're six, 3 and 8 months.
Oh, yeah, so they're probably just like, mom's working.
It's never too early to start.
Yeah, not quite yet. I think that they finally have learned that they call me the doctor and my husband the fixer. He's an IT auditor, so they've got that in their head.
Mm-hmm. But are you one of those parents that would say, like, do whatever you want to go into, or do you want to push for them to go into medicine?
No, for sure I would want them to kind of do what they want to. Even with my med students, when I talk to them about what they want to do for the rest of, they're going into med school, they're already in med school, but what they actually, the career they chose, my nephews and nieces, I mean, it's kind of if you don't love it, every job has its pros and cons, but you have to, at the end of the day, have some desire to do it because you're the one who has to wake up in the morning to do it, mm-hmm. Not anybody else. So I definitely, would say is you have to love it. You have to love it in some way, shape, or form. Otherwise, you'll be miserable, and then it'll make everybody else miserable around you. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. So I guess the being in the line of medicine and medical, it's a lot of pressure. You know, you have people's lives are literally in your hand at times. How do you handle that pressure? And like, what kind of advice do you give to your students about that pressure?
It's a lot of, don't ever stop reading. Don't ever stop thinking that your education is ever ended, even after medical school is over.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's a lot of prayer for sure. And it's a lot of kind of giving up your pride. I think one of the hardest things for any physician, the physicians have a notorious personality stereotype of being arrogant. And I think it's a lot of kind of having to give up that kind of, you know, you have to ask for help if you don't know what's going on, and you have to admit when things have not gone the way that you had anticipated or that you were expecting. So it's a lot of trying to just, you know, find that this is a blessing of the position that you're in, but it's also with the blessing of Allah that you are able to even help. So if there's something that you don't know, that's also a blessing in its own way, and to ask somebody for help, and to even to tell the patient, like, I don't, you know, like, I don't know what the answer is, or I'm sorry, you know, the outcome wasn't the same, and kind of working with the people, well, the patient, your staff, the people around you, just to kind of get to, you know, the place that your patient needs to be, but also for you, because that tells you that this is a group effort. It's not just, it's not all on you anymore. And so I think that's important. Otherwise, it does, the stress, the mental stress, when, especially when there's bad outcomes, can really start to take a mental toll. And it's not possible anymore in this day and age, because people are sicker than they were many years ago. And so you have to be able to see that now this is team effort to help take care of people.
Well, thank you for that answer, Dr. Siddiqui. We're going to have to take a quick break, so just stay on the line, and we'll bring you back in soon, inshallah. And for our wonderful listeners, our conversation is not over, so stay with us as we come back after these messages. And you can call us with any questions, comments, or suggestions at 312-263-4752. We'll be right back.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
Okay, here goes. I know more about cooking dinner for a party of 12 than I do about packing a lunch for a 12-year-old. I know kids like things like PB&J, pigs in a blanket. Oh, and fish sticks. They do love fish sticks. Filets I get, but sticks? What part of the fish does the stick come from? I know I can read a cookbook that'll tell me how to make a red wine reduction, but where are the cookbooks that can teach me how to cut the crusts off bologna sandwiches? Oh, maybe we can compromise on mac and cheese. Can you make that with brie? Everybody likes brie, right?
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to push your food around their plate. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Radio Islam, the nation's first daily live call-in talk radio show produced by Muslims for the mainstream market. Radio Islam, on the air since 2004 because of your generosity. Radio Islam salutes its most valuable asset, you, our listener. From our producers to our interns, we appreciate your support. Thank you.
Life returns, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar.
Hello listeners, I'm Shermin Ahmed, and you're listening to Radio Islam on 1450 AM WCEV. Today's conversation is about Muslim women in medicine, and right now we have Dr. Siddiqui, who is a professor of medicine at Midwestern University, to talk about her experience. Welcome back, Dr. Siddiqui.
Thank you.
Okay, so it's been kind of a theme that we've had with our other guests. One was a med student, one was a professor of biology, that you have to love this profession to go into it. And one of the things that me and Wahaj have been pondering, you know, we come from this culture where a lot of parents and stuff are like, go to med school, do something medical. Have you ever seen, like, the pressures that students have had with that? And, like, what kind of advice do you give them?
I'm sorry, do you mind repeating the last part again?
Yes. So, like, for people who come in with pressures from parents, like, go into medical school, medical is a good line. What do you tell them for if they're not interested?
That's a hard one, and I think a lot of times by that point they're already in their first or second year. They've already been entering medical school. So first, if they are students who are, for example, pre-med, who are coming to me, it kind of, you know, The pressure is definitely very real, and I wish I could say that the pressure has improved with a newer mm-hmm. generation, but unfortunately it hasn't. So if they're pre-med, I kind of really tell them that it's really not it's not the same it was 20, 30 years ago, where their parents or their aunts or uncles are kind of telling them that this is the profession to be in.
Mm-hmm.
It's changed. The pressures are different. It's just the workload is not necessarily improved or worse, but it's just different. It's just a kind of a different type of stressors with electronic health records. Now there's bigger systems to kind of dictate what you do and how you do it and when you do it. So it's kind of a really, you know, consider other options.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't enjoy any part of it, it just makes you miserable. And then if they're already in med school, it's kind of okay, you know, I know people who will go through the medical school process, and then once they're done with medical school, they'll, you know, go and do their MBA or they'll do something else. So I tell them if they're looking for something, you know, if they can survive through it, and this is really, if they'd rather do this than have, you know, deal with the conflict, then, you know, finish it off, but then try to find something that's still, even within the realm of medicine, is still mm-hmm. something that's interesting. So it's nice. That's the one advantage of medicine, and with a lot of different fields, is that you don't have to be your typical doctor seeing patients. You can go into administrative or the financial or the teaching. So there's options, and it's kind of a, you know, make sure that the route you're choosing is still the route
mm-hmm.
That you want. It's never easy, and sometimes you're battling. You're not, you know, talking to the person is the easier part, but battling, you know, the advice that you give with what the family's advice is oftentimes the difficult thing, and people really, I think people feel like they're going to get negative ramifications for taking the route that they choose. I feel that in the beginning it's always rough, but then when they see that the happiness and the benefit
mm-hmm.
That somebody, that they can provide to the community and to, as a Muslim, that I think that the long-term effects are far better than if they went the route that they did not choose or prefer.
Definitely.
All right, Dr. Siddiqui, we actually did have a caller coming right now. His name is Brother Siraj. Brother Siraj, are you with us?
Yeah, it's actually Jafar.
Oh, I'm sorry, Brother Jafar. Okay. Brother Jafar, you can go ahead and ask your question.
Yeah, sure. My question is more about the health benefits of, you know, fasting. We all know that's good, but in our community, what are some of the things that you're seeing where people aren't doing well enough to take care of themselves from a, you know, health perspective? If there's any telltale signs that you see, and what are some of the, you know, top three things we should probably watch out for as a community?
So generally, fasting is actually, there's actually been a lot of medical reports about how fasting in general, the, you know, is there's so many medical benefits for it, especially with the high rates of diabetes and high blood pressure and high cholesterol in our communities. And it's kind of across the board. There's not one culture that ends up being more affected than the other. But the Southeast Asians, the African Americans, the Blacks are really big about that. And a lot of times what I see is this culture of eating excessively. So, you know, between going to parties and going to just the get-togethers, it's just this, you know, excessive eating. So it's a lot of trying to encourage people to lots of vegetables, a lot more of kind of eating organically in terms of, you know, a lot more of the fruits and vegetables, less of the carbs, less of the red meats, which is so much said, easier said than done. And then kind of just watching portion control. And then the last part I would say is walking. I mean, any type of exercise is great, but any type of exercise, especially things like something simple as walking, would really benefit us as a whole community in the long run, because it'll, hands down, the best treatment for most conditions is exercise, which as a community we are really bad about doing. So that's what I would kind of say is, in terms of at least the top three things that come to my mind of how to change our culture of diseases in our in our society.
Thank you so much for that answer, Dr. Siddiqui. And thank you so much, Brother Jaffer, for asking it. That's great advice to always take in. We are actually out of time for our show tonight, but thank you so much, Dr. Siddiqui, for coming on to our show and sharing your experience and your advice with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. All right, you have been listening to Radio Islam, a call-in talk show from 6 to 7 p.m., 7 days a week on WCEV 1450 AM. To find out more about tonight's guests and their work, hop onto soundcloud.com/Radio Islam 1450, where you can also stream, download, and comment on our shows. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Islam 1450 and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Radio Islam 1450 to stay connected and view our live streamings. The executive producer of Radio Islam is Abdul Malik Mujahid. Your producer today has been Wahaj Khan. Our engineer this evening is Leonard Murphy. And Radio Islam is a Sound Vision Foundation production. The views expressed are the views of the hosts and the guests, not of the Sound Vision Foundation. Be sure to check out all of our past shows, radioislam.com, and connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram under Radio Islam 1450. I'm your host, Shamin Ahmad, with
Wahaj Khan.
Join us tomorrow evening for another great show on Radio Islam.
Peace.